Well, you really don't have to look all that hard to realize that things, well, they're not going so well. In fact, no one's walking around on sunshine. And if they are, it feels a lot more like Jared's version than anything we're used to hearing on the radio. We are living in what is easily one of the most difficult seasons of our lives. The normalcy of life seems to have been just taken away from us without any real promise of when or if it might actually return. And it's causing everyone I know to behave so irrationally. In fact, just this past week, Laurie and I were sitting in my truck in the Kroger parking lot waiting on our click list order. Because let's be honest, that's a date night these days. When right in front of us, a fight broke out. I mean, two grown adults just completely lost control over a parking space. In an instant, they were both out of their cars. They were screaming, they were cussing, they were waving their fingers in each other's faces. You could see their fists start to clench. And me, well, all I could think was, oh man, I'm gonna get to share this story in a sermon one day. But seriously, it took a teenage employee, probably someone not making near enough money to have to deal with this type of craziness, to stand between two grown adults to get them to calm down. But that's life right now, right? And on top of just trying to survive a trip to the grocery store, we're dealing with more serious problems. Maybe a job loss, a challenging season with your kids, or maybe even a bigger loss like the death of a parent or a loved one. But what I've noticed more and more during this season is that difficult situations seem to always be accompanied by annoyingly optimistic people. I mean, you find yourself in the midst of your darkest moment, and inevitably, some well-meaning person who really is walking on sunshine comes out of the woodwork to, you know, cheer you up. I mean, how many times have you heard someone say something like this when you're navigating something difficult? Hey, man, just look on the bright side. Or how about this one? You know, it could always be worse. The spiritual versions of these, they are even more annoying. Maybe some Christian has actually told you, God's got this, or tritely reassured you about, you know, his plan for your life. We've all heard these optimistic cliches. And most of us are actually guilty of saying them ourselves. And while some of them are true, the problem is that when you're in serious pain, the last thing you want to hear is someone telling you that your pain is not that big of a deal. Nothing is more real in the middle of your pain than your pain. So when somebody comes along and says, stay positive, better days are ahead, it could always be worse, you know, it feels like their optimism is doing more harm than it is good. Now, if you joined us last time, you know we started a conversation about hope. We talked about the tendency we all have to place our hope in things that are actually false hopes. Things like our circumstances or preferred outcomes, they all tend to let us down and they leave us hopeless. And at the end of our time, I invited us to do something rather challenging. I invited us to all practice placing our hope not in what we can see or not in even what we want to see, but instead in the person of Jesus. We said it this way. We said, hope is the confidence in something good based in someone good. Well, today, I want to talk about something that I think is a major threat to hope. It's actually something you may not have ever thought about before, but I'm willing to bet you've certainly experienced it. In fact, when we're in the midst of our most hopeless moments, I think it's something that we all intuitively understand. When we are in need of hope, optimism is not enough. Now, that might strike you as a bit odd because we often use the words hope and optimism interchangeably, but there is a profound difference between these words. Hope can lead you to optimism, but optimism can actually rob you of hope. Let me illustrate it this way. You may have heard of the difference between these two words talked about in a story about a guy named Admiral James Stockdale. He was captured during the Vietnam War and he was a POW for 8 years. He had zero certainty as to whether he would ever see his family again or if he would ever even make it out alive. He was routinely starved, beaten, and tortured. Yet through it all, his will was actually unbreakable. Early on, Stockdale came to the conclusion that optimism wasn't working. In fact, the optimists were the ones dying out. He says it this way in his memoirs. He says the optimists were the ones who said, we're gonna be out by Christmas. And then Christmas would come and Christmas would go. And then they would say, we're gonna be out by Easter. And then Easter would come and Easter would go. And then it was Thanksgiving. And then it would be Christmas again. And ultimately they died of a broken heart. He said, I never lost faith in the end of the story. I never doubted not only that I would get out, but also that I would prevail in the end and that ultimately I would turn this experience into the defining event of my life, which in retrospect, I would not trade. Psychologists referred to this as the Stockdale principle. It goes this way. Great companies, organizations, and people are those that retain hope that they will prevail in the end, but also must confront the brutal facts of their current reality. If they can't, they probably won't survive the tough times that come in between. This explains why when you're hopeless or when you're in pain or you're defeated, you can't just look on the bright side of things. It's why one of the most infuriating things when heartbreak or hardship come our way is being told it could be worse or even God's got a plan for you. And being told to put on a happy face and smile even though your heart is breaking is actually the last thing we want to hear.
Smile through your fears and sorrows. Smile and maybe
Now, I love Nat King Cole, and I actually love that song. And I totally agree that in the midst of heartbreak and hopelessness, life is certainly still worthwhile. But the truth remains that if we boil hope down to something like that song, it's probably not what we're looking for. That's really just optimism. And optimism is not enough. Optimism says better days are ahead. Life will get back to normal, and all I have to do is focus on the good in order to just ride it out. The problem is, when there is less and less good to be optimistic about, we become hopeless. Hope, on the other hand, knows that even if better days are not right around the corner, we can still be confident about the future because we are confident in the love of the one who is writing that future. We see this kind of hope so clearly when we look back at the early church. A few thousand years ago, a guy you may have heard of, a guy named Paul, was on a mission. We know all about Paul because Paul wrote most of what we call our New Testament. And the mission he was on? Well, it was a mission to show the world that a new era had been ushered in by Jesus. He wanted everyone in the whole world to know that everything had changed and that it had changed for the better because of Jesus. He carried a message that said, no matter where you were born, no matter who your parents were, no matter whether you were a sinner or a saint, God had come to be with you. That you didn't have to steel yourself with optimism as you stared down this cold, violent world in hopes that one day you could just escape to heaven, because ultimately heaven had come to earth and heaven had come to you and it had sought you out. And everywhere he went with this message, Paul was threatened, he was beaten, and he was imprisoned because the powers of this world weren't looking for a new way to do things. They had worked things out exactly the way they wanted them. And you know what? If Paul had been relying merely on optimism, I don't think there's any way he makes it all the way across the Mediterranean spreading the good news of Jesus. Because you simply can't optimism your way through so many prison terms and shipwrecks and beatings. But Paul, just like Admiral Stockdale, retained faith that he would prevail in the end because he never lost faith in the end of the story. This is what Paul had in mind when he wrote to a church in a city called Corinth. Remember, at this point, he's between stints in jail and dodging assassination attempts. And this is what he says to this early church to encourage them. He says, "We are hard pressed on every side, but we're not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed." Did you catch all that? Because that doesn't sound like mere optimism to me. Paul was saying that his circumstances were coming at him from every single direction, that disappointments were constant and that they were overwhelming, to the point that he was so hard-pressed, it would have been easy for him to literally be crushed back into a corner without any hope for escape. Paul was saying that things were so bad that he was completely at a loss as to how to respond to his difficulties. Yet, he could still write that he wasn't yet without hope, that his situation would tell him he had been abandoned and struck down by not only his oppressors, but also by the God that he loved and served. Yet Paul confidently replied, "I'm not destroyed. I'm not finished, and I don't believe that God is finished with me." That's some true hope. That is certainly way more than just optimism. Paul was not only willing to face the brutal facts of his own reality, but he also had hope in the person who was writing the end of the story. Not hope in his own expectations, not hope in things like the stock market or in his job title or maybe the daily news headlines, and certainly not just a blind faith that better days were out in front of him. No, he had hope in a person, so much so that he goes on to say, "Therefore, we do not lose heart, though we are outwardly wasting away. Yet inwardly, we are being renewed day by day. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but in what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." It's like Paul is saying to them and ultimately to us, don't get caught up in all the outward pressures and hardships. That stuff is always here. And the more you focus on it, the more you will lose hope. Or the way he says it in dramatic fashion, the more you will waste away. Instead, now is the time to look inwardly to the part of you that is being renewed every single day. Now is the time to look not at what you see around you. That stuff will destroy you, but instead at what should or could or even will one day be seen around you because of what God has done and is continuing to do in you. Paul wasn't giving up. Paul wasn't losing hope, even though outwardly he was being destroyed by his circumstances. Instead, inwardly, that aspect of his humanity that was changed the moment he decided to follow Jesus was constantly gaining hope and growing forward through his difficulties. Paul might have been outwardly wasting away, but he did not lose heart because inwardly he was being renewed by God so that he could be used by God to renew the world around him. This is not optimism. This is far from optimism. This isn't circling a date on the calendar and just hoping things will look better by then. This is looking way past optimism, all the way to the end of the story. This is Paul embracing the realities of his situation and never losing hope because his hope is in the one who controls his situation. This is understanding the truth that God does not promise to change our circumstances, but he does promise to change us through them. What Paul would tell you, what I would tell you, and what ultimately I believe your Father in heaven who loves you more than you could possibly imagine would tell you if he were speaking to you is this. Yeah, sometimes I'm going to take the pressure off. Sometimes I'm going to intervene and I'm going to change your circumstances. But no matter what, I promise every single time to give you the inward grace, strength, and power to endure. Your husband may not come back, but you can still have hope because I am renewing you day by day. I am giving you comfort and grace and healing every single day. Your child may not call for a year, but you don't have to lose hope because I am giving you the strength that you need every single day. You may not get the job, the promotion, the college of your choice, the opportunity to go back to school in person, the chance to gather with your church face-to-face, the respect that you know that you deserve, the savings account that you want. But you know what? You don't have to lose hope in the end of the story because I am a God who renews and restores all things. Yeah. Sometimes God will change our circumstances. And when he does, it's incredible. And when he does, we celebrate like crazy. But no matter what, all the time, he promises to change us, to renew us, if you will, through those circumstances. And what's even more amazing, it's not only does he leverage our circumstances to change us as individuals, but if we'll let him, he also uses what he's renewed in us to restore and heal and change the world around us. And as long as that's your expectation, you will never, ever be disappointed. You will never, ever lose hope. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. famously said that the moral arc of the universe is long, but that it bends towards justice. That's the kind of hope that we just read about, that we read all about throughout the entire New Testament. Dr. King wasn't putting his trust in some optimistic inevitability of goodness. He put his trust in a person. He put his trust in Jesus, who renews us day by day and calls each of us into the job of making all things around us new again. He had hope in the end of the story, and he had hope in the person writing the story. In that same address, Dr. King continued, and he said this. He said, "Somewhere, we must come to see that human progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability." It comes through the time and persistent work of dedicated individuals who are willing to be co-workers with God. You see, Dr. King understood that we're not meant to just look on the bright side of things and shove down all the feelings that the hurt and the pain around us bring up. We're meant to run toward the brokenness and let God renew it in us and allow Him to renew it through us. What if Dr. King had just assumed that progress would roll in on the wheels of inevitability, that it was going to be okay and things would just work out in the end? Where would we be now? No, instead, he was willing to find the grace, strength, and power that Jesus offers us in spite of what's going on around us. In short, he found hope, not in his circumstances changing. Dr. King would be assassinated long before he got to see even a fraction of the change that he helped to lay the groundwork for. But instead, he had hope in the end of the story. And he had hope ultimately in the person who was writing his story. So yes, by all means, ask God to change your circumstances. Pray he will make things better. Beg him for what you want and for what you want to be true. But at the same time, trust him for the grace, strength, and power to endure in the meantime. I don't know about you, but I'm giving up on optimism. And I frankly think you should too. I'm giving up on optimism that things will just magically get better. Instead, I'm putting my hope in Jesus, who confronted oppression, torture, and execution, who, when he faced with his own death, prayed, "Father, I don't want to do this. I don't want this to happen, but you've got a plan, so let's just do your plan, and I will trust you, Father, to sustain me through it." See, he had hope in the end of the story. And what was the end of the story? It was him walking out of his own grave, triumphing over death, over sin, and over brokenness. God did not deliver Jesus from the cross, but through the cross, he delivered us, and he still does today.
Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine, heir of salvation, purchase of God. Oh, praising my Savior.